Hi there, wanted to let all of you know that this podcast is brought to you in collaboration with Soak, the world's first award-winning shatterproof glass that you can bring on the go. If you're looking for a cup that you can keep your beverages hot or cold for a long period of time, or a cup that you can use to help to reduce single-use plastic or paper cups whenever you're on the go, this cup is for you. Orderless, stainless, and most importantly, beautiful aesthetically. So if you want to check them out, check out their website at stoke.com and use the promo code COACHCARFE to get 10% off your purchase. Lower the lights down, hand over my crown, hand over my heart. I do this for my town, I do this for my crowd. So turn me up real loud, my time, none of you people can tell me to stop. Hi everyone, I am Coach Carfe and welcome to the Life Insiders Show, where we dive deep into the heads and hearts of highly successful people to discover how they get to where they are today so that you can learn and shortcut your way to success. If you haven't, please subscribe to the Life Insiders Show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on our YouTube channel to get notified as soon as our new episodes go live. Our guest today has had his career in big corporations and experience in climbing the ladder in the big corporate world. ExxonMobil, General Electric, National Broadcasting Corporation in New York, which is responsible for the famous shows such as The Today Show, and lastly, Johnson & Johnson. He is right now the founder and CEO of a social enterprise dedicated to providing access to leadership development to everyone of all ages in developing nations across Asia Pacific. His company has grown into one of the largest social enterprises and has built numerous impactful social initiatives in Malaysia and around Southeast Asia. He has won numerous awards in business, HR, and leadership development, including a Global HR Award and the Malaysia HR Leader Award. He is currently hosting his own TV show and writes a few newspaper columns and has his own weekly radio segment. He is a key thought leader in the field of leadership and business and frequently speaks at global conferences. And he is a friend and that I've known for many years. He has seen me grow and he probably has mentored me in some of the things that I do. And ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Roshan Tiran from Leaderonomics.
Yep, hi, Roshan. Great to be here. Cafe, very nice to be here.
Thank you so much for taking time off and spending this hour with us to really share your wisdoms and your learnings. And the reason why I really wanted to bring you on this show, it's actually the fact that you have had that big amount of corporate experiences that I think a lot of people can learn from. You know, especially these days when, you know, entrepreneurship, it's like, you know, the trend, right? Everyone wants to be an entrepreneur. Everyone wants to start a business. Everyone wants to call themselves as, you know, CEO or a founder of a company. But I think you have gone through that process of going through the corporate ladder, really going, in a way, I think you have gone to probably the highest or one of the highest position that you can have. And kind of like have said that, you know what, I've done it all. Now I want to do my own thing, right? And I think that's a lot of wisdom to share over there. So before we get there, you know, Roshan, why don't you start off with, you know, telling us a little bit about, you know, what are you up to right now? What are some of your new, you know, projects or initiatives in your life or in work or business that you're working on right now?
Yeah, so for the last 12 years or so, I've been dedicated to Leaderonomics. So it's a goal to try to transform Malaysia and as many countries, developing countries as possible. And, you know, transformation is tough because transformation, it's not just about, you know, physically seeing things change. It's also a lot of internal change that needs to be happening. I mean, you can look at ourselves personally, right? I mean, we can say that we want to exercise or we can say that we want to do this. And part of it is to do that. But a lot of it is the mind, right? Is the ability to enable your mind to say, I'm going to do it and I want to do it and overcome a lot of obstacles and beliefs that we have because that's the biggest challenge. And so, you know, really what we've been working on in Leaderonomics is really how do we transform young people because young people are ultimately with the catalyst to be able to drive change in the future. And that's, you know, it's hard to change the leaders currently. I mean, you look at a country like Malaysia and you've got all these leaders and even though you change the leaders, they come back, right? The old, you know, keeps coming back and that whole system, right, cannot be changed by just changing the leaders. You need to actually have a whole army of people that come with a new mindset, with a new belief, and with the impetus, right, to take the nation forward. And that's really what we've been working on, you know, a number of different things in terms of youth camps and youth clubs. And we have a club now in Cambodia, in Brunei, in Malaysia. You know, how do we start from really young to enable these kids not just to have the opportunity to learn and grow into leaders, but also giving them the infrastructure and then giving them the housing, right, to be able to practice leadership. And ultimately, when they come into organizations, to be able to protect them so that they will ultimately be leaders of value. So essentially, that's in a nutshell what we've been up to in the last couple of years.
Nice. And I mean, I know Leader Mix for a long time, right? And I really think that, you know, you guys have been doing a lot of great work to in that sector. But I want to kind of backtrack a little bit, right? What gets you interested in leadership, in development specifically?
Yeah, so I really, if you really look at me foundationally, and I don't know whether many people know this, but you know, one of my early experience was playing football, and I was very lousy at it, when I was around 12, but I was inspired because this fat, ugly, short guy called Diego Maradona won the World Cup for Argentina in '86, and I was like, whoa, if this guy can do it, so can I, right? and so I practiced by the age of 13. You know, I was actually playing for my school. And that time, my school appointed a coach, and his name was Mokhtar Dahari, and he was a very famous Malaysian football player. And in fact, he was the ultimate. I mean, today, if you talk about Mokhtar Dahari, he's the all-time the greatest football player Malaysia has ever produced, probably. And he was my coach, right? And he inspired me. And one of the things he pushed me and taught me, really, and many different stories I can say, but I'll just share one thing that he pushed me to. He firmly believed that talent is nothing. You know, talented people are rubbish, right? I mean, it's minor. You can have all the talent in the world, no use. The way to succeed in life is not talent. The way to succeed in life was hard work, grit, pushing yourself. And anyone who did that could overcome even talented people. Obviously, talented people that did work hard and pushed themselves became super, right? But his belief was always that. And he instilled it in me, you know, very young age that, you know, no matter what you do, right? If you work hard, if you push yourself, you can do this. And I started to learn about leadership, you know, as I started to be, you know, of course, captain my team, you know, in football, and also started, you know, I gained a lot of confidence from football because I could succeed in something that I thought was impossible. I knew that I could succeed in many things. And so when I went to the US, I got a scholarship actually to go to the US from a university there. You know, I within a year or two, I took over student government. You know, almost like a second year student. Nobody, you know, you kind of wait till your third or fourth year before you run for government. But I ran for student government. I won, became president of the school. You know, then a company called General Electric, you know, came by and said, hey, come and work for us. And even when I went to GE, I had this full confidence that no matter what was thrown in front of me, I could figure it out and I could overcome it if I push myself, I worked hard, and I totally focused on it. You know, exactly the same thing that Mokhtar instilled in me. You know, obviously then I had other coaches like Zainal Abidin and Dola Saleh and Arumugam. Arumugam was a goalkeeper at the time who actually died. You know, those guys taught different pieces of, you know, how the importance of skill and so football had a fundamental effect on me, saying that, you know, regardless, football is, you know, you look at it as a function, you know, like HR or finance or IT, right? If you can overcome this, you know, there shouldn't be an obstacle for you to jump into a function and be able to be expert in that function. You know, and that's kind of what I did. I became, you know, in GE, I was kind of the CFO of a number of organizations in finance. You know, likewise, you know, I also moved in GE to the HR space. I was in the technology space. I was Y2K project manager for a while. And every time I jumped into a new function, it was like, no, I'm not inferior. I just have to work harder. And I think that set the basis for everything that I've done, you know. Whether it's to start a newspaper, you know, whether it's to, you know, go into the digital side of things. And it's always been like, hey, we can do this. It's going to take time and effort, but we can be the best. And I always believe fundamentally that we can be the best in the world, which is something that, you know, when I came back to Malaysia, I realized a lot of Malaysians had this block, you know. And that's why I say a lot of transformation starts inside. Because if you believe you cannot be the best in the world, you won't be the best in the world. But you have to start with the belief that, hey, we are Malaysians, which means we are agile, we are small. You know, we can do a lot of things that other people cannot do. You know, we're entrepreneurial, which means that we can be the best in the world and we should be the best in the world. And when we start with that belief, right, then we work hard, right, we get to achieve that belief, right? But when we start, we are small, we are useless. You know, how can we compete with these Europeans and Americans? Who are we? You know, look at the Chinese. Oh, automatically, right, we will not take action.
Yep.
Because our beliefs, right, are the bedrock for us to have, you know, ultimately take action. And if we don't take that action, then we don't get the results. So ultimately, the results are highly dependent on our mindsets, right? That's why I said a lot of transformation is internal, you know.
Well, you talk about belief and you talk about mindset, right? Now the question is, when those mindsets come to you, you were talking about it just now, right? Oh, I can't do it. Oh, wow, these Chinese are stronger. Or, oh, we should, you know, follow the Westerners, Americans or Europeans, whatever. How do you conquer that mindset? How do you change that belief?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of things. I mean, if you look at companies, right? I mean, one of the things that I realized with many companies is that, you know, many companies have this belief. You know, if you're in a small company, there's a belief that small is negative, right? And usually these beliefs are come about because of experiences. Meaning, I've experienced, like, for example, my boss is like that. You know, tell him whatever, he won't listen one, right? But that is because that maybe it's their boss, maybe it's their own experience they had when they were school, and their teachers, whatever they told teachers, shut up, just sit down and listen to me. And so they started to believe that, you know, when I deal with authority, I just have to shut up and listen. You know, I cannot, you know. And so these beliefs, right, are driven by experiences. To change those beliefs, right, you need to change the experience, right? And I always tell leaders in your company, right, if a person comes with a certain belief, you need to change the experience. And the change of experience is not just one experience, no. You have to do it multiple times, right? And so once people start to believe, hey, it's true, this guy, you tell him whatever feedback, he won't get angry, right? When they start experiencing it, then they start to reformulate their beliefs. And they say, oh, in this company, it's okay to fight back with the boss. It's okay to do this. And so their beliefs start to change. But it's really experiences, right, that drive that change in belief, right? And so we talk about this as an individual, right? And we say, it's impossible. I'm not good at maths. You know, that's because fundamentally, you did maths when you were young and you failed, you know, first two times, and then after that, you just gave up. But that doesn't mean you're not good at maths. You didn't practice enough, right? And so to change the belief, you have to start changing the experience, and you have to start making maths fun and then re-experiencing it and say, hey, I can do this. Hey, I answer this. And after a while, you say, hey, maybe I'm not bad in maths. Maybe, you know, I'm just stupid. I should have focused more. And so you start, when you change the experience that you get, then you start to change the belief. Then you start to change the action. So many of us, right, try to change actions, right? And we say, oh, I'm obese, I need to go and exercise. And we try to do actions, you know. We try to do actions. But we have to change the habit, you know. Right? You know, that belief is the ritual, you know. And the ritual is after, you know, work, I come back and sit on watch the TV, eat potato chips. And of course, and you have to reframe the ritual. And the new ritual is, I don't care. The new ritual is, the moment I come back to work, no matter how tired I am, I'm going to go on the treadmill, I'm going to run before I eat, right? Because the moment I start eating, I'm going to get lethargic and I'm going to sit in front of the TV and do this, right? And when you start to do that, right, you change the ritual, then you start to change the belief, hey, I'm actually losing weight, I feel better, wow. And then suddenly the action is automatic. And that's where beliefs come about, right? You don't change beliefs by telling yourself, oh, I want to change this belief. You change it by changing the ritual that honors that belief, right?
That experience, right?
Absolutely, right? And that's how beliefs are changed, through experiences or rituals, right?
Wow.
And that's why it's tough, you know. That's why we there's a lot of theories out there. Oh, we must 28 days to change a habit. But actually what they're saying is the habit is a ritual. You know, when I create something and I keep doing this every day continuously, I've actually created a ritual. And that ritual for 28 days becomes a habit, right? And what that is doing is actually changing your belief, right? Or mindset, or whatever you call it, right? And that drives a new action. And that drives a new action results in a new result, right? And whether it's individuals or companies, it works the same, right? We need to hit the ritual.
But there's always that fear, right? Like when you want to change that experience, and most of the time when we decide to change that experience, it's most of the time the experience is something that we're comfortable with. It's a comfort zone, right? We call it in personal growth. So when you decide to change those experiences, or when you want to break free from those comfort zones, there will be fear, there will be uncertainty, there will be all this kind of self-talk or people around you telling you it cannot be done, right? How do you conquer those fears?
Yeah, so, you know, actually what you're talking about fear is actually called grief, right? And this grief happens in many stages, right? And you look, I'll give you an example. You are attached to something, right? Let's say this, I like to sit after hard day's work to TV, but you know that I need to exercise. Or, you know, let's give that as an example, right? But you're attached and then you become bonded, you know. Oh, this ritual, I'm so comfortable with. This is called bonding, right? And so what happens is now you're starting to say, I cut you from that ritual and I move you to reattach to a new ritual. But actually, before you can reattach, right, it's the same. When let's say I Kafe and I are such good friends, right? And then somehow you go to another country. And then I now, actually, you have detached from me. And now I have to attach to someone else. But before I attach to somebody else, I have to overcome this thing called grief. You know, it's a cycle. You attach, you bond, and then suddenly you detach. The moment you detach, you have grief. And before you reattach, we try to detach and then reattach. But we don't overcome this grief. And grief is this, you know, it starts like this denial. No lah, cannot be lah. And then it goes into bargaining. It goes into anger. You know, you go through until you come to a point of acceptance.
Yep.
And then you come to a point of forgiveness. Let me forgive myself for being that, you know. Or let me forgive this guy, you know. Or let me forgive him for dying. Why did he die now? He shouldn't have died. You know, let me forgive. And then I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the experience, right? And when you go through this grief cycle, and the same thing happens with habits, you know. We have to grieve it and say that was the past. I'm grateful for what it was for it. And once I reach that point of forgiveness and gratitude, then I can reattach to something new, which is the new ritual. And wow. And that process, right? You know, I call this the grieving process. And we look at it in companies too, right? Companies are sometimes, that's why people hate change, right? They will say, okay, we're changing our structure. You know, today, Kafai, you're going to report to, you don't report to me, you report to Vision now. Oh, then you know, for you, you're like, oh, you prefer reporting to me, or you're happy, right? Either way, right? So you're happy, there's no, that the grieving is very minimal, right? But if you're not happy, you're like, I want this boss, right? And so institutionally, there's organizational grief. Companies are grieving, you know, people in the company are grieving. That creates an organizational grief. But because the company is so busy, let's just move to reattachment to this new process or this new habit or this new structure. We don't let us prepare because every individual needs to grieve and every company needs to grieve. And there's a process for grieving. And sometimes we don't let the process run its course. And so what happens is we don't reattach really. We are still attached to the old thing, you know. And that's why when we say the moment we say go back to the old habit, right? The moment we don't comply, because usually like police, right? You monitor, did you do this? Did you do this? The moment you stop policing, right? Guess what happens? People go back to the old ways. People go back to the old habits. Why? Because we didn't allow them to grieve it and goodbye. Because that's what you know, when someone dies, right? We have this grieving process, right? And you know what's the ritual? The grieving ritual? We let them cry in funerals. We have a wake, you know, say whatever you have to say. Then we let them bury the person, put the body or cremate it or whatever you do. And then sometimes take the ashes and put it there. There's a process, you know. And at the end, right, you say goodbye to that person, right? And it's done. Now you can reattach, right? Now, when you do organizational change or when you have a personal change, right, we don't have that process. You know, we don't cremate. We don't bury. We don't do that, you know. And that's why I say we are ritualistic people. We need to ritually close down that old ritual or the old process or the old habit and reattach to something new. And that's the tough part, you know, and that's where organizations don't get it. Many times I talk to them, hey guys, we can do this change, right? But we need to help them. We need to help your employees go through this process. And that's where people like you do very well, right? I mean, you as a coach, you come in and you enable folks to go through, you know, this process and reattach to this new process or the new structure or the new business model or to the new culture or whatever, right? I mean, there's or the new leadership, right? If there's a new leader on board, right?
Yep. That's a really great way to put it because I think this is probably the first time that I heard someone using the grieving process to overcome fear and to overcome comfort zone. And it makes perfect sense because we spend too much time trying to forget something or trying to let go of something and straight away go with something new. And everything that happens in between, that is the tension and that is the conflict that we need. That's Absolutely. What you call the grieving process.
Absolutely.
Great analogy for this one. Now, I want to touch a little bit about your corporate career. And I think you are like an example of, you know, a person who have climbed through the corporate, really push yourself through, achieve big things, and eventually leave and start your own thing. But throughout that process and in that corporate career, were there times that you feel that, oh, you know, this is not what I want to do in my life? Like, I don't want to do it anymore. I just want to go and do something else. What was your experience in that?
Yeah, so you know, it's very interesting, right? Because I think all of us, right, and all humans are like this, like, we have different sort of, personal goals are differing at different points in our life, right? So when I started out with you know, when it was at Exxon, you know, it was all about making money. Wow, I can make so much money. And, you know, when I become assistant manager, I became excited. Then when I got to GE, right, I realized something like, oh, you know, GE people think I'm good, right? And, you know, I get getting promoted, right, to roles, and I started to believe, right, maybe I can be the CEO of GE one day. And that became that obsession, right? And so it drove me, like, to work harder and push myself. And, you know, even if I have to work sometime 18, 19, 20 hours a day, it doesn't matter, right? Sleep for 3-4 hours and then get up at 6 and back, you know, back to 6 to 12 midnight and or 2 a.m. sometimes, you know, it doesn't matter, right? But then, you know, I got married, and then, you know, when my child came, you know, suddenly you started to realize that, hey, maybe, and especially when I started to come back to Malaysia and Asia, right, I started to realize that life, you know, I can become, and when I got to know the CEO of GE at that time, Jeff Immelt, you know, I once a year or twice a year, he comes down to Asia, and I got an opportunity to follow him on his Asia tour, you know, and I was like, do I want to be that, right? Look at the stress, look at that, you know, and I also got, you know, to be good friends with a couple of Premier League managers, David Moyes, and, you know, got to see them, and I'm like, wow, I met him 4 years ago, and he had, you know, looked so young. Look at him now, you know, he's I'm like, you know, the stress, and, you know, I started thinking, like, and personally, I started to be very clear about my purpose. I thought my purpose was more, and that's why I moved to HR, you know, from running business, I moved to HR. It was like, my role was to help people. And when I came back to Asia, it was very clear, it was about helping young people and to help to transform the country, because nobody else was going to do it. It was really about driving character change and the inside change, the stuff that we talk about just now, like enabling people to breathe, enabling people to understand transformation happens from the inside, not necessarily from the outside. A lot of outside changes, you know, education, a lot of external stimuli. But what happened to the internal stuff? So we had a lot of educated people with all these degrees. But when you look at Malaysia, right, and you look at our leadership, right, of our country, what happened? They all have this, you know, great, you know, external degrees and certificates and so on. You know, our health minister, you know, but yet on the thing coming out, right, from their mouth sometimes it's like, what's happening, right? But they're from such prestigious, you know, from UM la, doctor la, this la, that, right? And so how what has happened, right? And so that's where I started, you know, and so where your question is at different stages, I feel that you have different goals and different aspirations, and I think it's fine. You know, live it up. You know, if it's about money, you know, you want to be an entrepreneur now, go ahead, you know. And but I think at some point in time, when the same, you know, it's do you want to build a business? And that's why I became an entrepreneur, not to make money, right? Was to do, you know, is to do what Steve Jobs originally wanted to do. Like he made money from the process, and somehow Apple forgot about their journey of reinventing industries or putting a dent in the universe, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was really to transform countries, developing countries, you know, in Asia, right? And that vision now is in Thailand, you know, it's in India, it's in Indonesia, you know, in Cambodia, we're moving, right? And to me, it excites me. And so part of it is that I think each of us have to go through that journey. It took me many years, right? I mean, I became, you know, almost, you know, in my 40s, right, is when I started really, you know, people thought I was stupid, right? I mean, I was a high paying, you know, global job with Johnson & Johnson. I was literally a global leader, right? And to give it all up and to basically, you know, kind of say to myself, hey, I'm going to be here. And you know, when you start up, right, everyone says, oh, when you start up, I'll support you. But the reality is, when you start your own business, nobody's going to help you, right? You know, the reality is like, oh, everybody's busy doing their own thing. And even though friends who say, okay, when you start up, I'll be your customer. Oh, you know, now there's all kinds of excuses. Oh, my boss, you know, your products, you know, I don't know whether you can help me. And we're looking for big companies. They don't want to sign up with small ones like you. You know, so you got to start from scratch. And initially, the thinking is always, did I make the right move? But I think on hindsight, and even now with COVID, right, my business is completely wiped out, right? I mean, you know, for the last 2-3 months, it's like zero revenue, right? It's like, you know, I've got 80, 90 people, but how do I pay them? And, you know, we are taking loans now to support our employees and so on. But the reality is, I think, you know, then I read about Richard Branson, I say, we're just going to collapse. I read about everybody's, you know, the billionaires are struggling. Tony Fernandez is begging for money from all of us to say, hey, please allow us to, you know, not refund
your money. Keep your money, yeah.
I'm like, okay, so I'm not so bad after all, right? They're all in the same shoe as all of us, right? But the reality is not, for me, it's not about making money. For me, it's about transformation. And for different people, it'll be different goals. And it's fine. If your goal is to set up a business so that you make money, that's great. But at some point in time, right? And I've seen this, many CEOs that I coach, right? You know, especially the big ones, you know, like they become billionaires, right? You know, and then now, you know, I'm accessing a lot of these billionaires, right? And with them, right? One thing that's very interesting is, you know, at some point, they believe that success is important, you know, and success is measured through money. But at some point in their life, they realize that success is not as important as significance. And they start the journey of moving from success to significance. And significance is about legacy. It's about how did I put a dent in the universe? How did I leave the world better than when I came in, right? And usually, many of them reach that point of success and then they reach significance. So for me, if you look at it, maybe my success was corporate success, you know, not monetary success, but corporate success. And, you know, monetary-wise, I mean, I don't live in a shabby place. I mean, I live in a decent place, right? So corporate success has given me lots of luxuries in life that I probably wouldn't have had, right? I mean, but what happened then was now my journey of significance is not about making money. And that's why Leaderonomics, we're always at a break-even model, right? You know, it doesn't matter, right, whether we make that much. Because, and you know, previously we've had kind of shareholders that are nice, right? I mean, now maybe we are reinventing a little bit and maybe we'll get some shareholders that want us to make a bit of profit. It's fine, right? Because the profit ultimately is for the shareholders. But for me, my mission remains very steadfast, right? Is to work on transformation of nations, right? And I'm going to be, and that's the journey, right? And so I think a lot of us have this journey of success and we define success differently. Maybe for us, success is our children. Maybe success is money. Maybe success is a position in a company to be a CEO of a company, you know, whatever. But I think at some point in time, then we start to realize that there's a second journey we need to take. And that's the journey, the journey of significance. That's you know, and that's real victory for, you know, for many of us. And I think many will go through that.
I really love how you put it, from success to significance. And then my question, you're speaking from your experience of, like, you know, you have, in a way, you have had it all in corporate, right? Your last position in corporate, you're leading the global HR team of Johnson & Johnson, $1 billion company, right? But how then for people like us or people out there who are, you know, probably just started a career or maybe in their job for like 3 years, 4 years, they're still trying to achieve that success in a way from monetary point of view, because I also think it's not wrong to chase for money, because realistically speaking, we need money to pay the bills, support our parents, yep, support ourselves and so on. But yep, how would you encourage young professionals to be able to maybe probably do both of this at the same time, or how can they work on these two journeys at the same time?
I think that's where the confusion happens. I think a lot of young folks, we try to jump the journey to significance, right? Without really, you know, it's like, let me give you another example. Malaysia, right? We want to be a very innovative country, but to be innovative, right, we need to be productive first. You see what happened in the 80s and 90s, right? Is a lot of companies like GE and all the American companies, they learn from the Japanese, because the Japanese, they became very productive in the 70s. The most productive land. And so, you know, what happened is in the 80s and 90s, Japanese became very innovative. That's why, you know, they had the best mobile phones, they had the bidet in the, you know, in the toilets and all these things, right? Japan technology. Yeah. So America learned, okay, before we become innovative, let's be productive. So in the 80s and 90s, GE led the way, right? With Jack Welch, clean up the business, be lean, be mean, you know, be productive, be the most productive enterprise. So in the 90s, you know, America became very productive. You know, the employees are productive, the quality of productivity is very high, right? And so the 2000s with the dot-com boom, there was an innovation, you know, boom, right? Because people became more innovative, because everyone is very productive. Now the next differentiator is innovation, right? You know, how creative and innovation. And so now Malaysia, we say, oh, let's just be productive. Let's just be innovative straight away. No need to be productive. So we have data-rate breaks. Our employees are not productive. We are one of the lowest productivity levels in the world. No, never mind. Let's create. Let's run. You know, a game program. Let's come up with tech companies and let's you know, let's do biotech. Let's do this. Let's do that. And let's be super innovative. And we fail. Why? Because first there's a productivity curve, right? We must learn how to be very productive. Then we have to go to the innovative curve, right? Now the same thing happens with us as humans. I think we have to learn how to be successful in whatever definition success is to you. Right? And that's our productivity curve, so to say, right? Because we need to learn how to live our life optimally, you know, and that means being successful, right? And that's a journey to success. So if you say my success is money, okay, that's great. Show me how you can make your money. If my success is to be a best parent, that's great. If my journey of success is for me to become CEO of SimeW or whatever company we work in, then let that success journey. But then you work on that journey of success, because that enables you to figure out how to execute and be operationally productive in your life, right? Because that's a journey of productivity, so to say. Now comes the second journey, which is significance. Now, for us to be significant, we need to already be successful. We need to already know what it means, because that gives us the confidence to say, now that I know how to get there, let me take what I've learned and focus on this new journey of significance, of how we can now impact the world positively. Because I've already picked up skills and ability and networks and contacts, and all these things, right, that now helps me. And then my significance journey can grow faster, right? Mm-hmm. When we try to do both, right, we try to be significant, but I will remember our network is small, our knowledge base is small, our skills set is small, our capability is small, our ability to think in a broader base is small, right? Because we're just coming out of, and we think we know everything, right? And we think we can Google it. But really the idea, if you can connect dots, not now, but you connect dots in the future, right? When you reach, you know, Steve Jobs always said, you connect the dots from the past, you know? So when you reach a certain time and it's 30 years, 40 years, 45, you start to connect the dots. But to have reached that point when, let's say you're 40, you need to have many, many experiences. You need to have learned a lot. So now then you start to say, I'm very clear. This is my mission of my life. And for the last 20 years, it's a search for that mission. But the search for the mission happens when you're trying to be successful, right?
So
and that's how I put it.
So what you're saying is that first thing that we need to do as young people, young professionals, and I think for all listeners who are listening, it's to create the first definition of success first, right? And it could be monetary. And I think what's important, that you the word that you put in there, it's the definition of success. It's basically, how can I live my optimal life, right? Yes. And basically, it's up to you. How can I live my optimal life? Does my optimal life means that I need to be able to support my family? I need to be able to support my parents, or they are well independent. They have their, you know, pension or whatever. They can take care of themselves. Now I just need to take care of myself.
Absolutely.
So what's my level of optimum life, and find my ways to get there, and then I can think of significance.
Yeah, and then along that journey, you will realize that your life will change. You see, the problem is we try to short-circuit our life. You see, life is beautiful experiences, right? And when we try to say, oh, my end goal, at the age of 15, I figured out what my end goal is on how I can drive significance. What's going to impact you is when you go to that business trip to Brazil and when you see what's happening there, or when you go out to, you know, Cambodia. And I've got a guy, you know, who's the president of Taylor's, right, at college. And this guy came to me and said, look, I went to Cambodia on a trip and I want to move there. And ultimately, I hired him because he said, I want to open up Leromix there. And he said, actually, I don't want to open up Leromix. I just want to go to Cambodia because I want to help the poor people there. But can we set up Leromix? And and so for 2 years, he was my head of country for Leromix. But and after that, he's now hired by the Ministry of Education in Cambodia to run a whole bunch of things for them. And we are in, you know, of course, he's then said, okay, Leromix, you come in and we give all our free stuff to the Cambodian Ministry of Education. But what I've said is that he was almost 50 years old before he figured out his purpose in life. But the purpose in life happens, and he always thought, no, my purpose in life is education. Right, he sort of knew it was education, but he didn't know education where and what and when, right? And now it becomes crystal clear. And he moved his whole family, his kids, everything in Cambodia, and he's going to stay put there for forever, right? Because he said, that's my mission in life, right? And I think many of us, we short-circuit ourselves by saying, I know my mission at 15. But you haven't experienced life. You haven't experienced all the permutations. And you know this, right? When you start working for this company, you start, you know, you were in different, your internship with Isaac, right? When you did this and you did that, and suddenly you met Mind Valley, and you suddenly change a lot of your own thoughts on what your life should be, right? And so allow yourself that freedom to play, to experiment, to enjoy life, right? Until life gives you clarity that this is what I want to do. And when you have that clarity, then go on your journey of significance, right?
I think this is a very important lesson. And it is super important because, see, a lot of young professionals that I coach, right, 25, 30 years old, you know, they have a decent career, right? 4 or 5 years, about 8 years into career, and probably earning quite okay money, right? Less than 10K probably, but around 6 to 10K, right? And then the challenge for them is that, you know, now, I'm afraid to do the next thing. I'm afraid to take the next step because, you know, like, what if it's not the purpose? What if it's not the thing, right? So when this thing came about, how do you kind of go about that thought process, right? Like, there's a lot of fear. I know you talk about fear, you know, you have to change your experience and so on. But it's difficult. How do you, you know, encourage young people to take that step?
Yeah. So actually, the first one is very hard because, you know, it becomes a habit when you keep doing it, right? So I was lucky in a sense that in GE, right, they practice this thing where every year and a half, 2 years, you need to move to a new role, right? And I was lucky, right? And in fact, I was part of a program, right, in GE and a very elite financial management program for you know, trying to build CFOs in a company where every 6 months, they move you to a new rotation, you know, so to say. So what happened is that you need to start to figure out that, and especially, you know, if you've been in your role for more than 2 years and you're under 30, right, you know, you need to get out of that role because really 6 months you can learn the job, right? And you can kid yourself, like, oh, I'm learning new things and all. But the reality is your learning is very incremental. It's not exponential. You see, when you start a new job, your learning is exponential. And then after a while, it's like this, you know, you start a new job, you learn like that. And then after a while, you plateau. You're learning, but at a very incremental level. So what you want to do early in life is to have many exponential jumps, right? So usually I would say 1.5 years. So first 6 months, exponential. Then about a year, you go incremental. Then jump to the next job, boom, do the next exponential. And if you can tell yourself and convince yourself that I need to have this exponential. You don't have to change companies, you know, you can just change roles in your organization, but do different things. Because when you do that, you start to actually see yourself grow in exponential. And after a while, you realize that you become addicted to exponential growth. And after a while, this is what we call agility. After a while, you become very agile. You'll be able to learn faster than everybody else. Because after a while, your body, your whole, everything will tell you that, oh, I'm going to a new job. For 6 months, it's going to be hell. No problem. I'm going to figure this out. I'm not going to be worried. I'm not going to be fearful. But the first 2 or 3 or 4 times, you'll be frustrated. I remember my first few job changes, right? NBC, for example. When I went to NBC, I was like hating it, right? Even though it was so sexy. Everybody in the... All my friends like, wow, you're at NBC, how cool. You're in Rockefeller Center, wow, you're in news and sports, wow. You're hanging out with Conan O'Brien, man, you're having lunch with him. Wow, you met Arnold Schwarzenegger, you met, you know, all these people because, you know, I peek in and I go into the green room and meet all these guys. And obviously that time we didn't have mobile phones, so, you know, we didn't go around sharing stuff. But, you know, I got to meet all these guys. And the reality is the work sucked, right? My boss hated me and, you know, how come you cannot do this and this and that? But you know that first 6 months, it's complete for me, it was like completely new industry, right? You know, people they look at very different things. You know, when you're in financial services, you look at different things. When you're here, you know, you're measuring eyeballs. Our revenue is the eyeballs and advertisement is different. And so I had this huge learning curve. But after a while, I started to be good, right? And when you become good, right, then you know, I wanted to stay there forever. I wanted to stay in NBC forever. And one of my bosses kicked my butt and said, get out of there. You know, you've been there long enough, you know, take this job, go to Europe, experience something new, you know, go and do integration. You've never done that before. And finally I did, right? And I took that job in G Capital in Europe, right? But you know, you get comfortable, right? Because you really like it. It's a sexy job. Who wants to leave, right? New York City, right? But you need to, and then after a while, right? And I hated it. My first 6 months when I was in Europe, I hated it, right? Because it's like, I was struggling, right? But then you get good, right? And every job, after a while, you tell yourself, 6 months is going to be shit anyway, right? You know, I moved back to Malaysia, the first 6 months was shit. You know, I never slept, right? And you just say, it's going to be shit, right? When I started the company, you know, first 6 months was bad and everybody's like, you know, what are we going to do? I'm like, it's going to be shit, right? So what the hell? You know, you just know that it's going to be bad, right? And then you tolerate it. And of course, when I started a company, I think it was more like first 2 years were horrible because it was completely different era. But you know, you kind of have the tolerance built in, but it only happens if you do it. And unfortunately, I cannot tell you the first step is just do it. And you hate it, trust me, you hate doing it. But after you do it second time, third time, you start to tell yourself, thank God I did it, right? And that's how it works, you know.
I like that you use that theory of exponential growth, and I think, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but it is in that exponential growth that we, at the end of the day, we actually find the most satisfaction. I think people, you know, we don't find satisfaction by looking back in our life and see what is the plateau. We only are able to feel that satisfaction because of the deep or the exponential, you know, learning curve that we have gone through. Then we're like, wow, I actually learned so much. That's how we build and have that sense of satisfaction. And I guess, you know, you have a lot of the experiences moving to different countries, different roles. It's crazy to think about it, right? Now to talk about that, right? So in your opinion, what are some of the mindset that young professionals these days need to adopt so that they can be successful in their career?
Yeah, so, you know, I always say that learning is key. So you got to have the mindset that you're... One thing I like to do, I always tell myself I'm the stupidest guy in the room, right? If you're the stupidest guy in the room, then everybody else is smarter than you. Means there's tons of things to learn from them. So, you know, to me, I carry that from young. That you know, when you enter a room, you're always the stupidest. So, you know, I don't know if you notice, whenever I go in, usually I'm one of the quietest because I'm trying to absorb and listen and you know, and then sometimes I ask questions. But you know, the when you have a mindset that I know everything, then even though you may be the most prominent person, you know, like, you know, sometimes I go to a room, I'm like, oh, everybody knows Roshan, you know, but you tell yourself that you're not. So you try to listen to other people. And it works two ways, you know, because people start to also say, hey, this guy, you know, it's listens to you. You know, it's not just talking about things all the time. So, you know, it helps in that way. But that's one mindset. I think the second piece is that you also have to start to believe that you need to, that pushing yourself and pain is very important. So, you know, a lot of us believe that, you know, we can try to wing it the least amount of pain and the least amount of effort. The problem is that you end up, you know, not having, like give you an example, you can become the prime minister, you know, without having, you know, you jump shark. You know, I don't go through all the experience. See, if you look at Singapore, right? Wai Lee Soon Leong, he speaks Bahasa, you know, he went through every single ministry portfolio and now he's the prime minister of Singapore. Right. So he's got that, you know, he understands everything. And then now he's prime minister and he's able to have empathy. He's, you know, he's able to demonstrate a lot of things that are there, although they have their own issues and they have their own challenges. But when you go through a process, right. And that's what, you know, good thing the father did was, you know, send the boy to every single ministry. And then now, okay, now you're ready to be the prime minister. In the meantime, he was not ready. So, you know, Mr. Goh took over for a couple of years before that transition, right, in Singapore. So, you know, you look at it the same way. If, for me, if I don't get those experiences, then I will never be a great leader because I will never be able to connect the dots properly. So, and getting these experiences are painful because every time you change jobs, it's painful. So tell yourself, I need to get pain because the more pain, the more gain, right? No pain, no gain, right? So you got to get those. You know, tell yourself pain is good. Pain ultimately will help me. You know, the more pain I go through, and people, you know, footballers, we go through training and we go through painful training sessions.
Yep.
And some of the most painful training sessions I had was Mokhtar Ari. You know, after his training sessions, I would vomit one. I mean, you literally feel like you want to die, you know. And this is 2 hours of solid training every day, five times a week, right? Monday to Friday, every day, I'll be like, you know, at 8 o'clock in the morning, we go 10 o'clock. 10 a.m. in the morning, 10:30, right? I'll be lying in the field for half an hour flat, right? And the more I look back at those experiences, I tell you, if not for those, I probably would have never been that player that I was, and enabled me to ultimately go up to the U.S. and get scholarships and all these things, right? So each thing's built. And the last thing is that, remember, baby steps, right? Everything builds on it, right? You know, you talk about a journey of 1,000 steps, begin with the first few steps, right? So to me, take those first few steps, you know, take those steps, because ultimately you say, oh, I did 3 steps, I did another 3, but suddenly, you know, 1 month later, hey, I've done 300 steps, right? You know, which would not have happened if you didn't take those steps. And now, you know, I can take 20 steps a day. I don't have to take 3 steps a day because now my body is habitually used to it, right? And now the new habit is 20, then the new habit is 50, then it's 100, then it's 5,000, you know, and suddenly you're like, hey, I'm doing 20,000 steps a day. And suddenly it's like, hey, it's not, you know, end destination, now it's a daily destination because now it's 1 million, you know, which is the end, right? So all these things, you know, put it together, it's in parallel. I think you should be fine, right? Regardless of industry, regardless of company, regardless of entrepreneur or corporate person, I think you do those things, I think you should be fine, you know?
And I think, you know, what you just talk about can really be summarized in my opinion, one important word, and that's patience. Patience, yep. In the sense that knowing that what you do today will not get you the result tomorrow. Knowing that what you do today will not be successful in 3 months. It will take time.
And it's patience with execution. You know, I think I got friends also like, oh, I've been patient. I've been sitting here and, you know, I've been thinking about it because, you know, according to Napoleon Hill, you know, we can grow and think rich, you know, think and grow rich. You know? So I'm sitting here thinking about how to grow rich and I've been waiting for 3 years, but you know, all these guys are lucky and I'm not lucky, you know, I don't understand.
Okay.
You know, so it's you can, you know, one of it is having the mindset, but the other one is the execution, right? Yeah. And I think it goes hand in hand. You know, a lot Correct. Of people do one and not the other, like, you know, it's hand in hand, like, you know.
Patience, you know, with execution.
You know, yeah, and you know, my school, I come from MBS, and Methodist Boys School, and we have a Latin slogan. It's called Ora et Labora, you know, and Ora means pray. You know, so you pray, and Labora means work hard, right? So you pray and work hard, right?
Oh,
so
wow.
You play, you know, and people always say, they also say play, pray, and work hard, right? So you gotta pray, and then work hard, right? So that never forget that the praying is important, but so is the hard work, right?
I think, right? It really goes back to what you say in the beginning of this whole podcast. It's that at the end of the day, you know, having talent only, it's useless. The work hard, it's the most important piece of making anything work. But obviously, also caveat is that you have to work hard with the proper knowledge, proper information, and then you work hard. You don't blindly kind of do it, right? Now, one last thing, right? You are very involved in what you do in Deuteronomics, right? You are day to day, you are in the business, you're working on the business. Like, How does it feel to be constantly in the business? Were there times when you feel like, you know what, why don't I just sell this company so that I can do what I like and impact the world? Or why don't I just let someone else run it so that I can take a step back and focus on one or two small things that I'm really passionate about? What keeps you going in the business?
So actually that has happened. So, you know, in the early years, I was running the business, but now I have a CEO, Caroline, who runs the business, and you know, I've got a digital CEO, Sashi, who runs the digital part. And what I do is really focus a lot more on the community side, and also in terms of, you know, enabling the entire infrastructure of the Leadronomics group to work seamlessly among each other, you know. So I think what my passion is on the community side, you know, how do we transform a community? How do you transform, you know, different individuals and especially the young people? And one of the things I realized is that, you know, I need a funding mechanism to do the work that I do. Right. You know, so make sure the business is running well, make sure you have good leadership. And it took me many years to find the right leader, you know, in Caroline and Sashi and Huiming, to be able to run that part of the business. And I think, you know, and on and off, like COVID, right, the whole business collapsed, right, you know, in some extent, right. So then I need to step in and it's, you know, I need to exert leadership again, because now I need to help them to pivot and reinvent themselves, right. So, you know, occasionally I will step in, but generally, you know, I think as a leader, when you understand your significance, then you start to say, okay, what is it that I need to focus and zoom on? So I think it happens. I mean, I wouldn't say immediately. So, you know, probably about two to three years ago is when I let go of the business somewhat. I still am involved, but not so operational. I'm more, you know, involved with working with our investors, you know, trying to understand, you know, we are now doing a Series A fundraising, you know, so that I'm very focused on that fundraising. You know, we've never actually raised money before in our history. So, you know, it's going to be one of those interesting things. You know, we're 12 years in existence and now it's time to really propel ourselves. Obviously, investors want an exit plan. So maybe in the next 5 years, there's an exit potentially. But maybe it's an exit from, you know, the money-making side of the business. Maybe it's a refocus on the community side. You know, maybe taking some of the money made from that part and rechanneling it there and really zooming in on a deeper level there. So I don't know yet the answers, but I think all of us in our different journeys, we will encounter it and we'll probably know at some point in time when's the right time to let go and when's the right time to continue holding on and when's the right time to jump back in. You know, Howard Schultz, Starbucks, he let go. And then, you know, a couple of years later, Starbucks started to sink. You know, 2008, he came back and, you know, boom, Starbucks again. You know, now he's let go again, you know. So I think there's times where, you know, founders, you know, kind of founder chairman, you know, we jump back in, we have CEO responsibilities. Sometimes we don't, you know. So I'm very clear on the country leadership. I've got Caroline in Malaysia. I've got Pati in India. I've got, you know, Churapon in Thailand. We've got, you know, Michael in Indonesia. You know, so we got our leadership. I think a little bit more of, you know, maybe of the overall group level. And maybe one day I'll find a group CEO who will replace me. And you know, maybe that's the time where I can really, you know, figure out, you know, then I'll be like Richard Branson, maybe, you know, have a own Nectar Island and figure out what to do. I think it's still some way along, you know, he's selling his island now. So nice. Even nice. To go back to the roots, right? Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for all these nuggets of wisdom, Roshan. I think your experiences and the kind of challenges that you went through, to get to where you are today are some of the things that a lot of us can learn, and the kind of mindset. And I really like it how you put in your football mentality into running a business, into your day-to-day life, which is purely like hard work. And for me, for example, that resonates with me a lot, because I also believe that, you know, I'm not the most talented person. I'm not the most talented coach. I'm not the most natural public speaker, but I want to compensate it with hard work because I believe in the impact of the work that I do, right? So thank you so much again, Roshan, for being here. It's really our privilege to have you. So for all of you listening right now, we would love to hear what you think of this episode. What's your biggest takeaway from this episode? Leave your comments on Instagram at Coach Carfield, or leave a review and share this podcast episode with your community. Till then, friends, thank you for letting me walk with you on your journey towards success. I'm Coach Carfe, and I'll see you in the next episode. Hey guys, if you like this episode or this interview, feel free to hit the subscribe button below so that you will be notified when we launch our new episodes. And just so you know, we have a lot more world-class speaker, world-class sports, world champion, and highly successful entrepreneurs who will be coming on our show to bring you, you know, their strategy, their life, and share with you their wisdom of how they get to where they are today, so that you can shortcut your way and learn from them so that you can achieve your success and your fulfillment that you want in your life. So hit the subscribe button and also follow me on Instagram, Coach Carfe, so that you can see behind the scenes of what I do and how I help people to achieve happiness, fulfillment, joy in their work and in their life. I'll see you there.